This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Text line 913-586-7965. I want to read this before we get back to basketball. CDOT, the Chiefs don't make the Super Bowl last year if Charles Aminihou doesn't come back from injury. There was not a biggest difference maker to the defense that was on a downtrend at the time that he came back. He unlocked George Karlaftis. The disrespect for Charles Aminihou is crazy. Give that man a two-year deal. I am not here to debate opinions with anybody. Everybody is entitled to their own opinion. I am here to tell you the facts. And if I am another team in the league and I am looking at the 2 years that he had in Kansas City, there are some facts. He started his Kansas City career suspended for domestic violence. In year one, he tore his ACL that caused him to miss a majority of 2024. And I'm with you. Charles Aminihou played well when he came back. He had one sack last season. That is not a player that I am rushing to go sign in free agency. And I think based on how the Chiefs have moved, the Chiefs don't really seem that worried about it. The Chiefs have been, I would say, active in free agency. Now, they haven't been major players or major spenders in free agency, but the Chiefs have pretty clearly shown you what their priorities are. Their priority was keeping Trey Smith. He is the only player in the NFL that is currently on a franchise tag. They really like Trey Smith. You have never heard an inkling of rumors that the Chiefs plan on trading Trey Smith. They didn't let Nick Bolton hit free agency, and they gave Nick Bolton $15 million a year and gave him 30 guaranteed. They really like Nick Bolton. When it came to the guys they wanted to keep, they got the Hollywood deal done pretty quickly. You never really heard, oh, Hollywood went to go visit this team or this team. No, they really wanted Hollywood back. Kareem came back. Juju came back. Have you heard anything about George Karlaftis? For a guy that people think, and I agree to some extent, that helped unlock the Chiefs' defense, it seems like that guy could help a whole lot of teams. Why isn't Buffalo all over that? Why isn't Baltimore all over that? Why isn't there a team that would want to take something away from Kansas City and sign a guy who you would have to think it can't be relatively expensive at this point? If you were Charles Aminihou, that multiple year contract nonsense is over. You're not getting paid multiple years. If you were going to sign for multiple years, you would have signed that 11 days ago, not today. Charles Aminihou is playing for somebody next year on a 1 year deal. He's playing for somebody on a one-year, $6 million deal. It could be up to $8 million with certain incentives if you can prove and show that you can stay healthy. And if Charles Aminihou can show that he can stay healthy and be the kind of player that he was in 2023 before the injury, that's a guy that gets paid. That's a guy that had 28 tackles, a guy that had 7 sacks, a guy that set the edge. Last year, Rob, how many tackles do you think Charles Aminihou had last season?
How many tackles?
And I'm saying is I don't think Charles Omenihu is bad. The point of this is not me telling you that Charles Omenihu did not help last year. He had one sack last season. How many tackles do you think he had?
I'm going to say a low number because you were not asking if it was a high number. 10?
6. That guy ain't getting paid in free agency. He ain't getting paid in free agency. So Charles Omenihu's best play is to come back to Kansas City on a one-year deal. He needs to sign the Juju deal. He needs to sign the Elijah Mitchell deal. He needs to sign the Kareem Hunt deal. Come back to Kansas City, be healthy, stay out of trouble, put up 8 sacks, and then go get your money, whether it's from Kansas City or somewhere else. But no one is making a multiple-year investment in a player. The last 2 years, you have been accused of hitting a woman. You tore your ACL. You had 6 tackles last year and had 1 sack. Ain't nobody investing a significant amount of money into you as a player. That is not how this thing is going to go for you. I'm here to inform you that.
He'll get DeAndre Hopkins' deal. DeAndre Hopkins got, what, 1 for 8? It was a one-year deal with incentives with the Ravens.
Something like that, yeah.
He'll get DeAndre Hopkins' deal. Because the same people on the text line that are saying, and maybe this is bad by me, that are telling me that, oh, he unlocked George Karlaftis. So the same people that are telling me that DeAndre Hopkins really nurtured Xavier Worthy. I'm here to tell you, you know what doesn't get paid in free agency? Unlocking other players and nurturing other players. He'll get DeAndre Hopkins' deal. It's probably going to be in Kansas City if I'm betting, maybe after the draft, but he will get the DeAndre. We will be stunned by how cheap he is when he eventually signs.
Yeah, if I had to guess what I think happens to Charles Omenihu is, teams are going to go through the draft and they're going to see if they can get a younger, very comparable player. And then depending on how the draft board shakes, you then sign Charles Omenihu after there. There's different waves of free agency. He missed wave one of free agency. Now, I'm sure he probably thought, hey, look at the deal I got this last time. I would say that your market has changed this time as opposed to the last time that you hit free agency. You weren't as productive of a player the last 2 years as you were coming into the deal. You've been injured since then. You've been suspended since then. I don't think you're viewed the same as you were the last time that you were a free agent. So again, I think he's going to have to ultimately end up signing a one-year deal or so. Let's just keep the Chiefs theme going, and we'll get to college basketball here coming up in a bit. So Nick Wright every week, dear friend of the show, he goes on Colin Cowherd's show. They always end up arguing and debating about the Chiefs. Listen to their most recent argument about the hometown squad.
Really worry about Kansas City. Joe Tooney is one of the more valuable offensive linemen in the league. Left. And they didn't want him to leave. They couldn't afford him. They don't have a left tackle. They paid a lot for Jalen Moore, who's never been a starter. By the way, they're not going to go 11-0 in one-score games. Raiders are better. Broncos will be better. The Chargers will be better. It never lasts forever.
This is an annual tradition where you pick a new team to win the AFC West, and then midway through the year, you're like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that. Also, you said the Chiefs didn't want to lose Joe Tooney. What, was there a gun to Brett Beach's head when he called the Bears and traded him? They didn't lose Joe Tooney. They traded Joe Tooney. So I just got to say, the rest of your bracket feels a lot like we are respecting the teams that were really good last year, except for, of course, the Chiefs.
This is the thing that's most confusing to me for anybody, not just Cowherd, anybody that shares this opinion. I think for the most part, the Chiefs are the same. Now, you can determine on whether or not you think that's a good or a bad thing, but look at their offense. What's different about their offense? It's the same running back room that played in the Super Bowl. It's the same wide receiver room. Now, we don't know about Rashee Rice, but you follow the point that I'm making. It's the same. On defense, yes, they've added Christian Fulton. For the most part, their defense is the same as it was last year. Now, let's see how they handle the draft. Let's see what changes they make. But the Chiefs are largely unchanged. Have the Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers changed that much to close the gap between where they were and Kansas City were in that short a period of time? Because I don't think any of those teams have done that. What moves have the Broncos made that you feel like they've closed the gap with? Is there a move that I'm missing that the Broncos have made that you're thinking, oh, okay, all right, they went out and got a legitimate number one wide receiver. They got a great defensive player. Hey, the Broncos look like a team that could go win their division. Have I missed the Chargers move? I haven't missed the Chargers move, right? I mean, do they get somebody on offense that I'm missing? Do they make a big move on defense that I've forgotten? Or is it just, it's year two, it's Justin Herbert, it's Harbaugh, we expect them to be better this upcoming season? Why are we even talking about the Raiders? Who's the Raiders quarterback? Geno Smith? We think that Geno Smith is entering this division and winning said division? With who? Who is he throwing it to? Brock Bowers and who else? I know last year the three teams from the AFC West made the postseason. The Broncos very well make the postseason again. I think they're kind of primed for a regression. That's neither here nor there. I think the Chargers are a good team. They very easily can make the postseason. They very easily can miss the postseason. That's just kind of life in the AFC. I haven't seen a single move or thing done by any of the other three teams that would lead me to pick them to win the division. Not a single move. Maybe I missed it. You guys can tell me, 913-586-7965. Maybe the Broncos have done something that you think I'm tripping. Maybe the Chargers have made a move and you're thinking, hey, this shores up their passing game. I have not seen a single move from any of those teams that would lead me to pick them to win the division. Especially when Kansas City, I think, is largely the same. I think they're largely the same. Offense, defense, I don't think the Chiefs, as of now, are drastically different than the team that won 17 games last season. The only two teams to beat Kansas City last year were Philadelphia, who was the best team in the league, and Buffalo, who was the second best team in the AFC. Yes, the 10-score games thing. That's been a theme of Patrick Mahomes' career. So yeah, maybe they don't go 10-0 in one-score games. Yeah, they'll go 8-2 next year in one-score games then. They'll go 9-1 in one-score games. They're not going from 10-0 in those games to now 6-4 or 5-5 in those games. There's no reason to think that with Andy Reid's history. There's no reason to think that with Patrick Mahomes' history. I don't want to overthink Kansas City. There's a lot of other teams that we can overthink. We can overthink the Steelers if they get Aaron Rodgers. We can overthink the Indianapolis Colts if Daniel Jones is their starting quarterback. We can overthink the Commanders and can they do it again? If there has been one constant in the National Football League for the last 5-6 seasons or so, it's been the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm not spending any time worried about if they're going to win their division or not. It's the one constant in the league. Rob, coming up on the other side, let's get through some of the regions in the NCAA tournament. That's coming up. Keep it right here. So Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. We are about to go through the brackets, the region in the NCAA tournament. We went through a couple of them last year, or last show. We went through the East and the Midwest. All right, Rob, why don't we go through the South region right now and kind of get a feel for how we feel about the NCAA tournament. Let's hit it, my man.
Carrington, we'll start our look around the South region, which... what do you think is the best first round matchup as you look at the South region, which features the number one overall seeded Auburn Tigers?
I actually think it got locked in yesterday with North Carolina winning in the first four. I think it's North Carolina against Ole Miss. I think that North Carolina, their inclusion of the NCAA tournament has been one of the early storylines. And with how well they played yesterday, they're a favorite in their game against Ole Miss. It does feel like a little bit of a coin flip kind of game. And I think people are either waiting to say, see, I told you so on either side. Either I told you they weren't good enough to make the NCAA tournament, or if you're like Seth Greenberg and you have them making a run to the Sweet 16, you can also say, see, this is why we felt like they should have been in the NCAA tournament, because they could go on a little bit of a run. If it's not for them, I think Louisville and Creighton is actually a pretty interesting game. With the backdrop of Lexington, Kentucky, which is right down the street from Louisville, Creighton is a team that has made a deep run in the NCAA tournament. They have one of the better bigs and Ryan Kalkbrenner on their team. I think Louisville and Creighton is actually a pretty fun, interesting round one matchup. So I'm going to go with Ole Miss, North Carolina. I'm also going to go with Louisville and Creighton.
Here's the thing. I love a lot of the games in this region. Like, I actually think the two regions we are previewing today are where the best games are going to be on Thursday, Friday, because Yale A&M has a chance to be fascinating. like you saw a lot of A&M this year. They're a little bit hot and cold. You talk about Auburn, you know, wilting down the stretch. There was a time where A&M was a top five team, and then they have not looked that way since. Yale is a good mid-major. Yale could beat A&M, and the 5-12 in this region is everyone's favorite matchup in the tournament, San Diego versus Michigan. Like, that is also a really fun game and an under-the-radar game to watch. I know 7-10 games generally aren't like, ooh, sexy, but it's the Patino no one's talking about. Rick's son, Richard, and New Mexico take on Shaka Smart and Marquette. Like, that, the round one matchups in this region are some of the best in the NCAA tournament.
Can you help me understand maybe this love for UC San Diego? Now, I'm not saying that they can't win this game. They're ranked 60th on offense. They're ranked 32nd on defense. And they're not a team that we've really spent a lot of time with, especially when you look at it on the other side. A team like Michigan that is playing their best brand of basketball right now. They looked really good in the Big Ten tournament. They finished third in the Big Ten. It feels like everybody is on the opposite side of Michigan, which usually is the right side to be on. Like, yeah, you should take Michigan in this matchup.
I think, and this was CJ Moore said yesterday on the show, part of the allure of it is San Diego is really good at causing turnovers. You mentioned their top 32 in
Michigan
defense.
Michigan be loose with the pill.
Michigan's like Kansas on the road. They love to give the ball away. It's their favorite little thing. So that's usually the starting recipe for a upset is one team has the more shots attempts, and that is a good start. Speaking of San Diego, Carrington, before we get to your sleeper in this region, let's talk about the double-digit seed, because there's a lot of options. Is there a double-digit seed you think could make the second weekend of the NCAA tournament in the South region?
I mean, I guess you would have to consider UC San Diego. You just mentioned it. They're one of the more popular picks. We gave you the stat yesterday. In four of the last six NCAA tournaments, a 13 seed has won in round one. Which of them is that going to be? Is that going to be A&M or Yale? I actually like A&M. I think they're a pretty good team. I think they're well coached. There's other 4-3 matchups that I think are a little bit more vulnerable than I think Texas A&M is. I actually don't really see a double-digit seed here that I love in round one. I mean, if New Mexico beat Marquette, I don't think you would consider that to be a sleeper in any way. I actually think at least in round one, I think for the most part, this is going to be chalk. I think Michigan's going to win. I think Texas A&M is going to win. I think Louisville's going to win in Lexington. I don't see a lot of surprises in round one in the South.
See, this is the every year there's one bracket that leads to chaos. We know how it works. There's one area where it's just pandemonium. We've seen it with St. Pete. It's just craziness galore. This feels like that bracket to me. I could see Lipscomb beating Iowa State because they're limping into the tournament. I could see New Mexico making a run because they could beat Marquette and they could beat Michigan State because Michigan State does not shoot the ball well. I think San Diego could play Yale in the second round. That would mean that a double-digit seed is guaranteed to make the round of Sweet 16. Louisville could be playing a home game in the second round against Auburn. That could get weird. Like, I think this has all the ingredients to be the, you know, chaos bracket. So me and you just see this one differently. Who's a sleeper in this region? We'll get to your pick. Who's a team that's flying under the radar in the South region that you think could make a run to the Final Four?
Texas A&M. They beat Auburn 2 weeks ago. Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M is, I think you could maybe argue they're the second best team in this region. I'm not super sold on Michigan State. I do think with the injury that you just mentioned, I think that A&M is a better team than Iowa State. I think they're better than Michigan, and I think they match up fairly well against Auburn. Again, they just played Auburn a week or so ago, and they beat them by double digits. Yes, A&M is a sleeper to come out of this region.
Me and you are on similar pages because I'm saying the SEC. Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss is a sleeper to come out of this region. If Ole Miss can get past Carolina, I'm down on Iowa State. Their second best scorer is not playing. You can beat Iowa State, and then it's a make or miss game against Michigan State, who's what, 338th or something in the country in 3-point percentage. I could see a scenario where Ole Miss, from everyone that tells me it's the best conference in the country, I could see Ole Miss making a run out of this bracket. But time to make the pick. Who do you have coming out of this bracket? Who is your Final Four team coming out of the South region?
I think a team from the SEC is coming out of the South. I think it's either going to be Auburn, Texas A&M, or Ole Miss. I think those are the three most likely teams. I understand it's Izzo in March. I just don't love this Michigan State team. I don't think they're explosive enough offensively. I do think a team from the SEC is going to make it. I'll take Auburn. I think they're the best team. And I think they have the best player on this side of the region. I'm going to take Auburn to make the Final Four out of the South. I don't love this region at all. There's not a team that – there's not a Houston that I love, a Florida that I love in this region. I'll take Auburn, but I'm not the biggest fan.
We talked about it earlier in the show. Auburn fits the KenPom criteria. Auburn is the team coming out of this region. Sometimes the best coach and best player is a good combination. Look at the Super Bowl this year. I know I'm cross-sport comparing, but – Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, and as much as I hate Nick Sirianni, he's clearly a good coach. Like that, sometimes just taking the best player and the best coach is a good start. Bruce Pearl and Johnny Broom, I'm with you. It feels like the ones he's coming out of this region, but I think it's going to be, they're going to go through layers of easy games to get through because it's just going to be a chaos-riddled region.
That was our look through the South region in the NCAA tournament. Be sure to check out our preview yesterday if you want to hear more about the brackets. We actually have one more region that we're going to get to. Matt Verderam is going to join us here coming up in a little bit. Really happy to catch up with him and talk a little of NFL action. We talked about this a little bit earlier today. Mel Kiper actually has Jackson Dart going in the top 10 in the NFL draft.
Well, first of all, last year in Mach 3.0, I had Bo Nix going to a team that he ended up taking him, the Denver Broncos. I got talked out of that in Mach 4.0. Nobody's talking me out of this one, Greeny. Jackson Dart locked into the Saints at 9 for me right now. Think about, hey, he went west with USC to the SEC, right? Bo Nix went SEC out west to Oregon. I think when you look at Jackson Dart, the improvement, completion percentage up every year, okay? Interceptions down, and he maintained that at 5-6. Completion percentage up every year. Touchdowns up every year. Jackson Dart with his legs, 1,500 rushing yards the last 3 years, okay? 8 rushing touchdowns 2 years ago. That's the underrated part of Jackson Dart's game. This is an NFC now, adding Jaden and Caleb, Michael Penix Jr., the division with Penix Jr., and two number ones overall, Baker and Bryce Young. And now you get Jackson Dart. You got to keep up with the division, Greeny. The Saints, you get new coach, new quarterback coming in together.
That was Mel Kiper earlier today on ESPN talking about the possibility of Jackson Dart going number 9 overall to the New Orleans Saints. Seems very high to me, but I do think that Jackson Dart is going to be picked in round 1. We'll talk to Matt Verderam about that coming up in just a bit. Before Matt Verderam joins us on the show, I want you guys to take a look outside. I want you to look at how cold it is. I want you to look at how dreary it is. And I want you to think of this. Over the last 10 days, it has been the most Kansas City weather I can ever think of. If somebody asked you what it's like to live in Kansas City that didn't grow up here, that doesn't live here, I want you to remember what the last 10 days have been like, and that's what it is. It wasn't that long ago that it was 80 degrees outside, and I was telling you to go on a picnic with your lady. It wasn't that long ago that you were taking your little ones to the park. You were outside running, riding bikes. Spring felt like it was here. It was not that long ago. The Big 12 tournament was just here. People were playing basketball in the middle of the street. It was great. People were hanging out at Power and Light. It was phenomenal. It snowed last week. They think it's going to snow potentially today. We had 50-mile-an-hour winds. They're telling you you can't light anything on fire outside. It's that dangerous. If you want to explain to someone what it's like to live in the Midwest, take the last 10 days of weather in Kansas City. We've gotten all four seasons in the last 10 days. It has been summer. It has been spring. It has been winter, fall. It's seasons that we've never even heard of before. We have got the full gambit of those over the last week and a half or so. Let's go to the phone lines right now to be joined by our guy, Matt Verderam, and go through some of the top stories in the National Football League. Matt, how you doing, my man?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Where do you think Aaron Rodgers lands?
Pittsburgh. Look, I've never really bought into this whole thing with Minnesota. Talking to people in the league, I think there's been some intrigue as to whether or not he would go there. I think love to go there if that was a possibility, but I was in the building in Minnesota in January, and there is a genuine feeling that J.J. McCarthy is going to be very, very good. Now, look, who knows? He is. See, Kevin O'Connell is a very, very good quarterbacks coach, very good offensive mind. So I don't think Rodgers is going to end up there. I've never felt that way. I still think Pittsburgh makes the most sense. There is some talk that, you know, maybe he's hesitant to leave New York. He's kind of put down some roots in the last couple of years. But I think in the end, if your Rodgers is going to be 42 this year, like, you have a shot at least to be reasonably competitive with Pittsburgh. I don't know if that's true with the Giants.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I mean, going to the Giants to me is just unserious. Like, I can't take it seriously if you go to the Giants. I mean, they could be looking at a scenario in which their general manager, coach, and quarterback are all gone for next year. That's just not a great system to me to build your foundation on. I'm with you. If he joins the Pittsburgh Steelers, they at least got a shot at making the postseason, and that's the most interesting destination for him. You got a great coach. You got talent around you. I can't really think of many positives for the Giants other than you didn't move.
No, there's not a lot of positives. And with Pittsburgh, you know, that is an organization that is very hesitant to change. They've had three coaches since 1969. I mean, the Rooney family is very traditional, conservative in their approach. That being said, Mike Tomlin's been there for a long time, and that team in the last decade has not won anything. They barely won a playoff game in the last decade. So I do think there's a little bit of internal pressure that isn't normally there in Pittsburgh. Hey, you don't win the Super Bowl, but can't be an easy out in the wild card. I mean, when you think of the Steelers in recent years, that's what they've been. They were an easy out last year. They were an easy out against Buffalo a couple of years ago. They were an easy out in Kansas City 3 or 4 years back. Like, they've been non-competitive in the playoffs. And while I don't think anybody in the upper crust of Pittsburgh's management or ownership is sitting there saying, yeah, you guys got to go beat Baltimore and Buffalo and Kansas City, you've got to be competitive. You've got to be able to win a playoff game. You've got to at least be able to kind of, you know, stoke the flame of contention. They're not doing that if they don't have Rodgers. There's no other option for them. So I expect them to make a real strong push to try to close that deal.
Matt, give me a team that you loved their free agency. Give me a team that made you scratch your head in free agency.
So, look, the team that made me scratch my head in a lot of ways was Cincinnati. Now, to be fair to the Bengals, they've re-signed Chase and Higgins, but I still look at the Bengals, and I don't really understand what they're doing. Like, it's very easy to just look at them and say, well, they have Burrow and Chase and Higgins, and maybe Hendrickson will see how it plays out. And that's enough to at least be competitive. And my answer is, no, it's not. Burrow just had what very well might be the best statistical season of his career. Jamar Chase just won the receiver's triple crown. Higgins had 10 touchdowns, and Hendrickson led the league in sacks, and they didn't make the playoffs. They did nothing to get better. Nothing. Bringing those guys back makes them better long-term. It doesn't make them better now. They had those guys. Those guys have been there. Like, they didn't add anybody. So I just, if you're the Bengals, it feels like they're just kind of treading water at best, falling behind. As time goes on. By the way, I said the same thing for the Chargers, who I thought were going to add a receiver, maybe get some help. Like, they added Mekhi Becton, which I like better than that. It was like it was the same teams coming back. On the other side of it, I love what Washington did, and part of that is beyond free agency. They trade for Debo. Debo's not the same guy, but that's fine. They don't need him to be the same guy. They need him to be good. And then they got Tunzel, who I think really solidifies an offensive line, gives Daniel some protection on the blind side. I like what they did there. It felt like they were just smart. They didn't panic. They didn't overly invest. They kind of were able to pick and choose. I think Washington's in a strong position moving forward. I also like what Minnesota did, adding to that defense. I think Minnesota got better. The Vikings, to me, if McCarthy is good next year, they're a real contender. The Vikings have a lot of pieces in place.
It's interesting because there haven't really been, I would say, many major trades so far this offseason. I saw a stat a couple of days ago that Adam Schefter tweeted out that there has not been a trade that involved a first-round pick. This is the closest to the NFL draft since 1993. Usually there's one of those kind of major trades that happen.
Right.
I'm wondering if who could that possibly be? Do you see one of those deals being possible between now and the NFL draft?
It's always possible, but I don't. Right now, there's not a lot of guys. I mean, Hendrickson, if he gets moved, there's not going to be a first-round pick. Okay? That's a second, late second, early third type of deal. If Cousins gets moved, obviously that's not a first-round pick. Stafford, had he have been traded, depending on the team, it could have been, although with the Giants and the Raiders, it probably would have been more like a second than plus-plus. I don't know that player's out there. I don't know. You know, if Chase had gotten traded, sure. Obviously, that's not going to happen now. I don't know who that guy is. And it doesn't mean it can't happen. Sometimes these things come out of nowhere. All, you know, a team makes a call. A guy's available that you think would be available, and boom. But no, the DK Metcalf of the world already dealt second round pick. Like, I think we're probably going to go into the draft very much more likely than not with everybody owning their first round pick.
Right now, we're talking to our guy Matt Verderam for a couple more minutes, going through some of the top storylines in the National Football League. Let's start with a couple of the proposed rule changes. The Lions want to change the seeding process. Basically, they just want the best teams to be ranked 1-7 in the postseason. It doesn't matter if you won your division or not. Do you like that change?
No, I don't. I think it's important to win your division, and I get it. I understand that a lot of times the fifth seed has a better record than the fourth seed. I know why they feel that way, and that's fine. But no, I don't agree with that. I hate that the NBA does their playoff seedings the way they do, where you don't have to win the division to be a three seed. To me, it cheapens the division. Then why even have divisions? Just get rid of them and just have a conference schedule, and you just play everybody once, and then you play whatever it is, a couple games over in the other conference and randomize it or whatever. I think it matters. I think if you don't have division winners having seeding advantages, it's going to cheapen the whole thing as far as the divisional crown and what it means. It should matter if you win your division. You should be rewarded. And, yeah, every once in a while you're going to get some team that goes 9-8 and wins the division. I get it. But, no, I don't support that.
The other proposed rule change has been the tush push. This is my feeling towards the tush push. They can't prove that it adds to injuries, because that would be an easy way to get rid of it. If they could prove, hey, this is unsafe for players, they could get rid of it. Where a lot of the pushback to the rule to me simply is, well, one team is just better at it than everybody else, and that's not enough for me to want to remove the play.
I don't enjoy watching it, but I would not be in favor of removing it, because to your point, if everybody was really good at it, fine. But everybody's not really good at it. We watched the Bills basically go home in January because they couldn't get a foot against Kansas City over and over and over and over trying to do it. And Josh Allen is the size of a linebacker, and they couldn't do it. The Eagles are great at it. And to me, if you perfect, it's almost like if back in the 60s, teams said, well, we've got to get rid of the sweep. You're not allowed to do the sweep because the Lombardi Packers are great at it. Well, that's your problem. Stop it. I understand the thought process. Like, look, it's not aesthetically pleasing, and it's not something we want to watch. I get all that. The Eagles should not be penalized for being great at something. I don't believe in that. I think, look, if you don't like it, stop it. Figure out a way to stop it. You can't tell me there's no way to stop it. There's a way to stop it. Nobody's figured it out quite yet. But you stop it. If every team had a 95% success rate, I'd say, yeah, just get rid of it. But that's not the case.
I got a couple of Chiefs questions before we get you out of here. What do you make of their most recent moves to basically try to run back last year's offense? They brought back Kareem Hunt. They also made the decision to bring back Juju Smith-Schuster. For the most part, as of now, their offense is virtually the exact same as it was for the Super Bowl.
I don't mind them bringing back Kareem Hunt, because I know Kareem Hunt's going to have a lesser role. You would think a lesser role than he did a year ago. I don't mind that. The Juju Smith-Schuster thing, I just don't understand. Just go get somebody who's younger and more athletic and can move and is going to play more than 12 games. That one I don't understand. I know he's beloved in the locker room, and I know Mahomes trusts him, and there's value in that. There truly is. But, do I love that? No. Am I going to freak out about him being the fifth receiver on the depth chart? No. I will say this. This offense and this entire team, this is going to come down. This whole season's come down to one thing, okay? Can the left side of the line block? If the left side of the line blocks, they're the best team in football, at least in the AFC, in my opinion. And I get it. They got blown out in the Super Bowl, and everybody remembers that game and just looks at it as like a referendum. They went to the Super Bowl having lost one game last year. They are a team that is absolutely the upper crust, but, is Rice going to be there at the beginning of the year? If not, for how long will he not be there? Worthy, there, I guess, to be fair, there's somewhat of the same question, although it seems like it's not quite as much of a question as it maybe initially appeared to be. You know, the Chiefs are going to add Rice and Hollywood Brown to this offense, essentially. But it's all about, can they block? If they can block, they'll be good offense. I mean, if they can't, they'll be a train wreck.
Couple more questions here, Matt, and we appreciate the time. Would you rather have Jalen Moore on the contract that he has, or would you rather have Cam Robinson on the one that he just signed with the Texans? He got a one-year, $12 million deal that maxes up to $14.5 million.
Probably the Jalen Moore deal, because if you actually look at it, they can get out of it after 1 year. Like, there's a little bit of dead money and all that, but they could get out of it. And I think Cam Robinson – and I don't mean this as a compliment or derisively. He's a guy. Like, he's an average left tackle. He's not great. He's had games where he's been really good. He's had games where he's been brutal. And I think why he was out there so long was the end of his time in Minnesota, that offensive line, and he in particular really struggled. Part of that was Darnold's fault, but he struggled as well. Jalen Moore, look, you talk to people, you know, around that signing, and there's a sense of, listen, there is the unknown. There's no arguing that. He said 12 career starts. But they like the way he was playing in pass pro in San Francisco. They like his ability to anchor. There's a thought that, look, you get him in there, coach him up, get some more experience, then he can go out and be good. And I think if you're the Chiefs, 2 for $30, you're not paying him to be Trent Williams. You're paying him to not be a road cone. You're paying him to go in there and just be good. And if he's not good, they'll cut him after a year. If he's good, they'll keep him. If he's great, they'll extend him. But I think I'd rather have him and his potential upside than Cam Robinson for 1 year. I know, like, look, there's no upside. He is what he is.
That is our guy, Matt Verderam, joining us on the show today to go through some of the top stories in the National Football League. Matt, great stuff, man. I don't know if you're a March Madness guy, but enjoy March.
St. John's, all done from New York, man. Root for St. John's like crazy.
Absolutely. That's Matt Verderam joining us on the show today. Always happy to catch up with him. I want to talk more about what he said there at the end regarding the Chiefs and their left tackle. We'll get to basketball coming up at the top of the hour. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, let's talk basketball at the top of the hour. Let's just finish our Chiefs conversation. This has maybe been a little bit more of a Chiefs hour than I expected it to be, but you know what? I'm always here to talk a little bit of NFL. Cam Robinson has just signed to be the Houston Texans left tackle. So they've had a little bit of musical chairs. They had Laremy Tunsil. They traded him to the Commanders. They now need a left tackle. They have signed Cam Robinson. They signed Cam Robinson to a one-year, $12 million deal that maxes out at $14.5 million. I want to replay what Matt Verderam had to say, and I'll react on the backside of it, because I've told you guys, I think you need to start looking at left tackle a lot more like quarterback and how you acquire the position. Also, sort of how we evaluate the position, and I think Matt Verderam kind of said it here. Here's what he said.
Jalen Moore, look, you talk to people, you know, around that signing, and there's a sense of, listen, there is the unknown. There's no arguing that. He said 12 career starts. But they like the way he was playing in pass pro in San Francisco. They like his ability to anchor. There's a thought that, look, you get him in there, coach him up, get some more experience, then he can go out and be good. And I think if you're the Chiefs, 2 for $30, you're not paying him to be Trent Williams. You're paying him to not be a road cone. You're paying him to go in there and just be good. And if he's not good, they'll cut him after a year. If he's good, they'll keep him. If he's great, they'll extend him. But I think I'd rather have him and his potential upside than Cam Robinson for 1 year. I know, like, look, there's no upside. He is what he is.
Does that not sound like the debates that we have at quarterback every single offseason? Cam Robinson is a journeyman quarterback. He's Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor's not the worst quarterback you can have. But if you sign Tyrod Taylor, we all know what your ceiling is and what your expectations are as a team. Jalen Moore is the quarterback that got 5 starts, and there's some upside there. That quarterback was Brock Osweiler. We've seen that quarterback work out before. We've also seen that quarterback fail before. We've seen the guy that get a small amount of starts and finally gets a chance to go somewhere else and turns into a pretty productive player. The Chiefs had that player when we were kids in Rich Gannon. Same kind of story. Or again, it could be Brock Osweiler. I understand why the Chiefs did what they did. I think overpaying for Dan Moore was the wrong decision. I think that the Commanders gave up too much for Laremy Tunsil at this stage in his career. They were never going to get Ronnie Stanley. I don't believe that he was going to change teams. I don't know if the Chiefs had a whole lot of options. I think option number one was you can go get a bridge. You can go get a Gardner Minshew, Teddy Bridgewater type at quarterback, and that's Cam Robinson. He is not the best left tackle. He is not the worst left tackle. You can win seven games with that quarterback. You're not making the playoffs, but you're also not getting the number one overall pick. And I think the Chiefs took more of a gamble. Yes, it is possible that Jalen Moore is a worse left tackle than Cam Robinson. There also is a chance that he is just a better left tackle. He is a younger, more athletic, and you have more team control over him for not that much higher of a price. You got Jalen Moore for $21 million. The Texans are playing Cam Robinson $12 million, maybe $14 for one season of him. I think the Chiefs got the best deal that was out there for the position. Now, there's a reason why he was available. There is a reason why you were able to get him so cheap. If you hit on left tackle, that is one of the better moves that we've seen a team make. If you miss, you'll be in this same conversation again, where either, like quarterback, you need to draft your own and develop your own. You can go find the bridge type. You can go find the Cam Robinsons, the DJ Humphreys, the Donovan Smiths, and continue to be in that ballpark. Or take another chance on a Jalen Moore, a guy who has shown you a little bit of promise, hasn't proven that he is a consistent starter yet in the league, and you see what you can get. I don't mind the path that they chose at left tackle. Given the options, that's the one I would have chosen as well.
I don't mind the value of it, and I understand the upside of it. There is a scenario in which the Chiefs signed a cheap left tackle and he's no better than they had last season. And now they're worse at left guard. Like, it is going to be a fascinating case study because both sides of the coin obviously exist. Like, and that's the case with all free agents, but I feel like despite, you know, me and you disagreeing early in friendship about Ronnie Stanley, you kind of know what Ronnie Stanley is. We don't know what Jalen Moore is. I know Matt Verderam says you talk to people in the organization, they like how he anchors and, you know, other football terms like that. And I've seen our friend Mitchell Schwartz on Instagram talking about how there are some things he likes and all the film people, they like, there are things to like. I'm not disliking the player, but at the end of the day, we don't know. So for the value, I think it was worth the very small swing and let's see what happens. But there's a world in which the Chiefs took a small swing at left tackle, got no better, and because that small swing had to move on from their left guard and got worse. And it's possible in week 5, 6, 7, 8, where they had problems on the left side of their line last year, the same problems could exist this season. It's cheaper, but is it better is going to be the million-dollar question.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do think that is the million-dollar question with the Chiefs, and that's why if you're going to save the money that you saved on Joe Tooney by letting him go and getting rid of that cap hit, I just wanted to see how else you were going to do it. I'm with you. You have now simply shifted the problem. You've shifted the problem around on the offensive line. That's why, at least for me, I want to see how you spend that money elsewhere. Are you better at pass rush? Are you better at running back? Are you better at wide receiver? I'm with you. There is a chance that their offensive line is not any better than it was than the one that they had in the Super Bowl. So you got to find other ways to improve the rest of your team. Let's see if they find that as we continue to go through the offseason. Really quick point here, and we'll get to basketball coming up at the top of the hour. Deion Sanders has an innovative way to change the college football spring game. Listen to this.
I like to play against another team in the spring. That's what I'm trying to do right now, to have it competitive. Playing against your own guys kind of get monotonous, and you really can't tell the level of your guys because, you know, it's the same old, same old. Everybody kind of know each other. Towards the end, I would like to style it like the pros. I would like to practice against someone for a few days, then you have the spring game. And I think the public will be satisfied with that tremendously. I think it's a tremendous idea. Yeah, I've told those personnel who should understand that it's a tremendous idea.
I'm telling you guys right now, this idea is the future of the spring game. The spring game is dying right before our very eyes. Teams are simply opting not to do them. I think the spring game is a pretty important factor in the college football ecosystem. It is another weekend in which people drive to these small towns in America and spend money and go to restaurants and stay at hotels. This is a thing around the country. I don't think that people are super interested in watching the scrimmages anymore. I think what college football teams need to do is start doing what Colorado's idea is. Now, no one expects Colorado to play Nebraska in the middle of April, but could Colorado play a local D2 school and they'll make it more like a game and they'll have tickets and you'll feel like you're getting an actual game? That's something I would go to. Instead of Missouri playing SEMO in August, why can't they play SEMO in April? That's a game that I would go to. Hey, I get to see the new quarterback. I get to see some of the new players. You can treat it like an NFL preseason game. You get to see Sam Horn. You get to see some of the other young guys, and they treat it like a game. Sure, if you want to make it where you can't hit the quarterback, yeah, but these teams are tackling during this time. These teams are practicing during this time. Why not, instead of playing these 1AA schools and D2 schools during the season, why don't you just simply play them in April and treat that like your spring game? I think there is a chance that this is the future of the spring game, because the way that they have been doing it for the last 50, 60 years, I think teams are telling you, we don't want to do that anymore. And I think if you were talking about the trickle-down economics of how it affects some of these small college towns, that some of the best financial days they have are when the football team is playing. I don't think you want to lose one of those days, and that's what losing the spring game could be. You could fix this by making a very simple adjustment and changing the way that you do it. Let's get back to basketball coming up at the top of the hour. Keep it right here. So Drive.